Welcome to the Labor Beat Radio Show, broadcasting here Tuesdays at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Enlightened Radio Network at www.enlightenedradio.org. And we always have a player also at player.enlightenedradio.org. And the podcast that we save most of the time, unless I screw it up here, are all piled on top of each other on latest burst on podcast.enlightenedradio.org. So welcome to this morning's show, my good pals J.B. Christensen and Scott Marshall. And I think we're going to have a Sean O'Leary show up here this morning. There's two, and we invited both of them, possibly. Anyway, so good friends from radio days and past, and also commentators on West Virginia from going way back. I think the Sean O'Leary that's coming on soon here wrote a whole book about, instead of what's wrong with Kansas, is what could be right with West Virginia. So that'll be a lot of fun. Anyway, in the meantime, maybe I can ask, I think I'll ask Scott. Okay, here, by the way, we forwarded the resolution sample you had to our members of our local council. I expect if we can get it on a good and welfare point, we're going to have a debate, because I already heard from one person who didn't agree with it. But anyway, I'm wondering if you could give us just an update for a moment on how this discussion about what's happening in the Middle East, which just edges closer and closer to over the brink of catastrophe, is developing, and if there's any new developments that you've seen or heard that are worth talking about here, because it's going to become a topic everywhere, I think, pretty quickly.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure I have anything new to. Well, one of the things that I've been hearing from several sources is that there is a rising tide within Israel against the war. And there are people there who are calling for an immediate ceasefire. And even people who, a growing number of people in both Palestine and Israel who are really serious about not only a ceasefire, but also a two-state solution that they think is the only possibility going forward. So, I mean, there does seem to be some shifting. And also, I think it's important to note that all over the world, there is growing, not every country, but there in the United States, in the labor movement, there is a tremendous growth in unions, and even the UAW International calling for an immediate unconditional ceasefire. I think at this point there are over 800 different labor organizations, unions, locals, retirees. My retiree chapter is one of them, that have passed resolutions calling for the ceasefire. So that's a growing trend, I think.
I know there's one spot of likely resistance here. And then actually it's in our region. I believe there is a almost entirely defense funded plant being set up. And matter of fact, that local, or the local that it's affiliated with, have had on and off. They used to be affiliated to the council, and then because we became too liberal on something, they decided to go against Obama. Obama cut some project that affected the jobs there, and somebody turned that upside down and turned it into a good reason to vote for Trump, which, not exactly a logical conclusion. Anyway, even if you're upset about a cut in jobs, but anyway, you can see where you can run into. So, here comes Sean.
Oh, good.
See if he's going to be on video or just. Good morning, Sean. Oh
There
my
he is.
God.
Hi,
All
guys.
right.
Good
You
morning.
know, well,
My man.
you just got woke up, but I'm in my bathrobe still. So, I don't think you should feel, that I don't feel any less embarrassed than normally. Okay. So, anyway, it's good to see you again. All right.
Great to see you too.
What have you
How
been
are
up
you
to?
guys? Oh, well, I've been splitting my time between Washington State, where I'm living right now, and mostly the Ohio Valley, the Wheeling, Steubenville area,
Right.
where
Does that
most of the
include
work that I'm
Ashland?
doing is based.
Does that include Ashland?
Yes, it does, as a matter of fact.
Well, that's where I was born.
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
Wait,
I know.
Ashland, Ohio, or Kentucky?
Kentucky.
Kentucky,
Yes,
okay.
right. Yeah. Now, my dad was one
Yeah.
of those people that went over the hills on behalf of Ashland Oil and Refining Company, getting people to look at their Bibles carefully and see if that could actually be a deed, or whether or not we could just take the mineral rights underneath. And he got so demoralized, doing that job that he quit, and went to Washington. Not for particularly progressive reasons, but because his family had friends with the Eisenhower administration and got him a better gig in the federal government. But nonetheless, he did think it was really immoral to go and, just stomp someone's 550-year-old Bible that says they own the land. And just ignore it, which apparently happened to thousands of people up in the Appalachian Hills. So,
Oh,
but
it's
what,
an
but
old
anyway,
story, God
yeah,
knows.
do you have a new energy plan for the country that you're thinking about? Besides that
Oh,
one?
not so much a new energy plan, although I suppose it's that. We've been focused more on economic development. It's just that, given what's going on in the world these days, it's kind of hard, especially in our region, to separate energy and the economy. And it's a situation where, we have a lot of industries, particularly coal and natural gas, that are, in the case of coal, they're struggling to hang on at all. And in the case of natural gas, the tide is starting to turn. We've probably topped out in terms of the amount of gas that we're producing. Already, Pennsylvania, for instance, is seeing less. And so the question is, kind of like, how do we go forward from here? And, in particularly the greater Ohio Valley, that region of the Marcellus and Utica shale fields, the problem has been that the natural gas boom has come. In a big way over the last 15 years, but unfortunately, it's come without any growth in jobs, incomes, populations are now in absolute decline, as are jobs. And so, what we've been working on are ways in which folks in that region can both benefit from energy transition to cleaner resources and at the same time rebuild economies and jobs. And it's been pretty rewarding stuff because we did put together a model that's been implemented in an old coal town in Washington State whose economy had been in decline for decades and which over the last 6 years has completely turned it around. In fact, it's one of the fastest job growing counties in the United States at this point.
What jobs? What kind of jobs?
The areas that are growing the fastest are, first of all, construction, is, I think, I'd have to look at the numbers again. Construction is number one. Transportation is the sector that's number two. And when I say construction, A lot of the work is, if you start unbundling construction, which can mean a lot of things, a lot
Right.
of it is in specialty construction. And specialty construction has to do with areas like door and window replacement, energy efficiency of all kinds, particularly physical upgrades, HVAC. A lot of electrical work is getting done there, a ton of carpentry. And probably after that, transportation has become very, very big. And then you get kind of average growth in things like retail. But yeah, one of
Right.
the encouraging things about it is because the jobs are weighted toward construction and related activities, it means that not only have jobs been growing there at twice the rate of the nation, so wages have grown about 50% faster there than in the nation as a whole.
Right.
Yeah, so no,
So
it's pretty exciting stuff. And we're hoping right now to win an EPA grant so that in the Wheeling area, we can implement, bring the same model there and see what can be accomplished there. So,
that's great news. That's fantastic news, Sean.
yeah.
Yeah,
So
no, it's really good. But I mean, there are challenges with it still because, when I talk about the construction jobs that are growing and, the categories that I mentioned a minute ago, which are things like, energy efficiency, door and window, insulation, HVAC, and things like that. Most of that kind of work is done by local small contractors who either start businesses or hire people. And so, not a lot of those jobs are union jobs at this point, just because of the nature of the makeup of the contractor base that serves them.
is
And
that,
so,
well, is that also the opinion of the Carpenters Union in the area as to why they are not union? I mean, are there other factors besides just the character of the carpentry, or is it just a small scale of a particular service? I'm gonna
no, it really does have more to do with the nature of the work and the composition of the companies that serve it. I mean, when you pick up the phone and call a local HVAC contractor and you're not in a major city or a large city, you're in a place like this. The town is Centralia, Washington, and
Right.
Lewis County, Washington. It's a
Right.
little rural town. It's about halfway in between Seattle and Portland, Oregon, along I-5. And so it's a town, the two largest towns in the county are side by side. They have a combined population that's about equivalent to maybe Martinsburg and Jefferson County
All right. Yeah.
combined.
Right.
So it's not far from Mount Rainier.
No, you can actually, from most of Lewis County, you can see Mount Rainier just to the north.
Yeah, on a clear day.
Which
On
this
the,
time of year
is
we
that
don't
supposed to
have
be,
many
is that,
of.
yeah, that's a state of
on the
Washington
question of,
joke. Go ahead. Go ahead, Scott.
just on the question of a just transition, are you getting support from all these organizations that are supporting that? I mean, even the miners' union president is a member of one of those organizations.
Yeah, the answer is yeah, generally. Now, first of all, you have to understand that this happened against the backdrop. This is an old coal town, specifically. Centralia, for going back decades and decades, its two largest employers in town were a coal mine, which employed about 650 folks, and a coal-fired power plant that employed about 350. The coal mine closed entirely, and the power plant has been reduced to one unit now, and it's down from a high of 350 to about 125, and it will close entirely in 2025. So the gains that I talked about, the whole transition plan was associated with the loss of those employers, and like, what are we going to do about this? And, you know, so, you know, both of those were union operations. Like I said, the coal mine is now gone entirely. And, you know, it's, you know, I can't honestly tell you that everybody who had jobs in the mine and in the power plant are happy with how things have turned out. I mean, you know, those are Cadillac, you know, blue collar jobs. When you lose those jobs, it's not great. And so, like any transition, some folks did better or worse. What they did, though, with the transition was they prevailed, they in the state of Washington prevailed upon the company that owned the mine and the power plant, TransAlta, to put aside about $55 million in economic transition funding for the community, which they used to compensate not just the workers, but people in the community generally. The workers got added benefits, but that they could use, you know, for education, not just for themselves, for their families and for everybody. And so, and then they also subsidized investments in things like energy efficiency. And again, not just for institutions or businesses, they went down to the residential level. If you live in Centralia, you can pick up the phone and call the Coal Transition Grants Board, and you can get $3,000 or $4,000 toward a new HVAC system. And it's really just about that simple. And what happened is that, you know, those investments, they would give you money. They don't pay for the whole thing, but they pay enough to make the return on investment, if you're like a homeowner, really, really favorable.
So the company that left the $50 million, is that what it was?
55, yeah.
Why'd they do that?
Because if you go back to 2011, they had a problem at the power plant, which is a problem that a lot of power plants have. It was an old unit that was in need of upgrades, capital upgrades, that they were going to have to make to remain compliant at that time with water pollution requirements in the state. And they, those requirements weren't going to come due for a few years. And they were debating, the owners, whether or not to make it or just shut the plant down entirely. And neither of those were really good options because they weren't sure the plant would last that long anyway. But on the other hand, if they retired it too soon, they still had debt that had yet to be retired. And so the state offered them a deal. The state allowed them to sidestep some capital upgrades in return for sharing the savings that they would achieve. They managed to save about $110 million by avoiding the upgrades. They agreed to shut the plant down by 2025, and they split the savings with the community so that the community could, you know, develop this economic transition plan. And that's where the $55 million came from. So it came entirely from the ownership of the company.
That's so fabulous.
Yeah, has the average income in the area, what's happened to it since this?
It's been going up again. I don't have the specific household income numbers, but yes, I mean, it's going up faster.
Compared to when the so-called Cadillac jobs were there, I mean, and subsequent, so well, overall?
Yeah, and that's in part because, one, the quality of the new jobs, it's, you know, you basically lost in round numbers about 850 jobs from the power plant and the mine.
Right.
But they gained about 4,000 jobs. Oh, and so the net effect is a positive one overall. But, you know, what the other thing that's interesting, though, is that the circumstances that, you know, put that $55 million in play, they're not as hard to achieve as you might think, because, first of all, because the $55 million is getting parceled out at a rate of about $5 million a year, because, frankly, you can only go as fast as the community can absorb. I mean, when you're in a relatively small city and region, you only have so many contractors.
That's right.
And so And, you know, it doesn't help if you do it such that economically it doesn't help that much if people turn around and go, you know, 90 miles to the north or 90 miles to the south to Seattle and Portland to bring in contractors. That right. doesn't help the local economy much. And so you do it at a pace that the economy and local contractors can absorb.
What shape is the local public school system and is there a nearby community college?
That's one of the key features of this thing. One of the first uses, the first $2 million that was granted by the Transition Fund was two. They had Centralia College, which is, as you a two-year community college, to put together a sustained training program, worker development program. And that program became important, not just for the obvious reason, because Centralia, like a lot of places, frankly, had a pretty, has, still has, a fairly serious drug problem with opioids and other things. And one of the complaints you would get from contractors in the area was that they couldn't find qualified workers.
Right. No, I understand. Yeah.
West yeah, Virginia, so they got together and the unions are involved and they put together a training center there, which recently Centralia, you know, the power plant that I talked about, is going to be converted into a green hydrogen production facility. You may have heard of, you know, the hydrogen hub grants,
yes,
the DOE just parceled
so
out.
You're going to be, and Centralia is going to have it the same way as kind of here. It's going to be, I think the proposal is to fire the thing with natural gas, but then once it's fired, it fires itself. Is that the same
yep.
theory as
yep.
other places?
Except it, in Centralia in the Pacific Northwest, it will be green hydrogen, which is made from water rather than methane. But when DOE made their announcement of the Pacific Northwest Hydrogen Hub would be one of those, it specifically mentioned, it called out the Centralia Worker Training Program in the announcement as being a critical factor in that.
Right. I think
are you going to do a write-up on it, Sean? Because I'd love to share this with people in West Virginia, because this is what we need. This is what we need in the Hydrogen Hub in Wheeling.
Yep. Well, you... Scott, it's interesting that you bring that up, because I am working right now, and it's not a sure thing by any means, working on a grant proposal for Wheeling, as a matter of fact.
Oh, great.
And, you know, we're months and probably a year away from finding out whether it's possible. But we got a lot going for us. First of all, and the answer to your question is yes, and I can send you guys the links to the original study that I did on Centralia 2 years ago, and then just recently, Ohio State University's economics department went out there to do a full quantitative analysis to figure out whether the coincidence of the grant program beginning and the revival of the economy there, They were questioning whether that was, you know, just correlation or whether it was the result of a causal relationship.
Cause and effect.
Yeah. And they determined two things. They determined, first of all, that the grant program was principally responsible for the turnaround there. And they assessed that compared to economies in the Ohio Valley, it's probably replicable because of the similarities of the economies in those two places. So, I'll send you links. They're on our website to both the Ohio State study and that. And in fact, the Department of Energy and the U.S. government at the COP28 conference just in the past couple of weeks, they actually presented the Centralia case there to the rest of the world as a model for successful economic and energy transition.
Wow. So another question.
I didn't even know that Washington State had any coal.
Yeah, well, that was the last coal mine in the state, and it's the last coal-fired power plant in the state.
Great. Cool. That's wonderful. God, another... that's such good news, Sean. I'm so glad I got a hold of you. I've been thinking about you for a long time. because we haven't really communicated on this level lately. But I'm so glad we had you on today because this is incredible news.
Yeah.
And it is doable in our region too.
Two more questions, Sean.
Yeah.
So construction and transportation. Construction, you know, is a feature of growth. But, you know, what sustains that growth? And assuming the political economy of the region going forth, is it still based on energy of one kind or another, or is it based on what's the economic development?
This is a two-stepper. This is really interesting. In those first 4 years after the grant program started in 2016, in which was the basis for my original report on Centralia, in those 4 years, while they were adding jobs at twice the rate of the U.S. economy, they did not attract any major new employers. None. Mm-hmm. They did it. It was entirely organic from within, both new businesses starting up locally and from within the local, largely contractor-based economy is where the jobs came from. And now, starting in, 2021, they have started adding major new employers. And now with the hydrogen hub designated, it's become a rolling ball. But what's sustaining it, and this is really, really interesting, is that so initially the grant program is plugging about $5 million a year into this effort, and it will end in 2025 also. That it will have been a 10-year program of grants going out. But what has happened is that the upgrades, particularly the energy efficiency and distributed generation upgrades that have been made there, have naturally resulted in bill savings. Folks are saving a lot of money on their monthly electric bills and other things. And as a result of that, the amount of money that is going into the economy from those bill savings is getting to the point where it's about to become greater than the value of the grants themselves.
Right.
And so for that reason, it looks as though the effects of this are going to be self-sustaining over time.
That's fantastic. That's so good.
Yeah.
So the employers coming in, are they services or manufacturing?
They've had a boom, it's not a huge deal. But in two areas, transportation, there's a fair amount of warehousing that's going on there. Centralia used to be an old rail town too, before the railroad system went out. What happened to them is they got hammered back in the 70s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. You know, in our region, we lost steel, was kind of the thing that collapsed in our region. In their region, it was timber. It was lumber and the rails that went with it. And that used to be back in the first half of the 20th century. That was the foundation for Centralia's economy, and it just went away. I mean, but they've still got, you know, that location between Seattle and Portland, and then areas east of there, still makes them a decent transportation center. But it's mostly, it's not, again, any one employer that's happening. They are seeing manufacturing coming back. They're growing manufacturing faster, although it's mostly kind of light manufacturing rather than heavy. Specifically, they're seeing furniture manufacturing, wood manufacturing.
You know, one of the things that concerns me about the West Virginia hub proposal is that, one, you're going to be generating the kind of power that could power steel mills, okay, with these hydrogen reactors, basically. And and the distribution of that power, you're going to, I assume, whatever the entity is that owns it or controls it is going to be able to meter quite a bit of income from that, so much that how does this process of concentration, it takes huge concentrations of wealth to create these things. These are not granola factories, okay? And, you know, who's going to get all the money from it, right? The coal industry, when it was the big, when it was the running all the power plants and everything like that, it was great, but all the money headed out of the state and the people got beans for it, okay? Is that, what keeps that from happening again with this new, very concentrated source of potential power and wealth?
In the case of Appalachia, there is nothing that's going to prevent that. In fact, it's almost inevitable that it's going to happen again, to the degree that the hydrogen, and I'm talking about the Arch 2 hydrogen hub specifically, which is the one that got the designation for Appalachia, and which is, as you pointed out earlier, natural gas based. And for the same structural, and I work on this issue constantly, for the same reason that the natural gas boom did not bring significant job growth or any other measurable economic benefit to the region, the hydrogen hub is likely to turn out the same way, to the degree that it is built. Now, there are a lot of elements that of the proposed hydrogen hub that frankly are on really shaky grounds. I know a lot of people imagine that, you know, because the Department of Energy parceled out $7 billion in grants to the seven hubs that were designated, that sounds like a lot of money and like it's a done deal. In fact, you know, that money represents only about 5 or 6% of the capital, going to your point, John, that they're going to have to raise to bring most of these projects, the 15 projects that are contained in Arch 2, to fruition. And it's a long way from being certain that it will even happen. We know, for instance, that if you think back 5 or 6 years ago, they were talking about a petrochemical manufacturing renaissance in the greater Ohio Valley, with ethane crackers, a fleet of ethane crackers up and down the valley. And that, of course, never came to fruition, precisely because capital markets looked at it and said, you know, this is nuts, man. You got one cracker in Monaca, Pennsylvania, and no others. And so, you know, the hydrogen hub and the 15 projects that are part of it, they face many, many of the same challenges. And we don't know that any of them yet is actually going to come to fruition. And a couple of them are already in real trouble.
Well, it looks to me like Brother Manchin recruited, or was recruited by, Bill Gates, because Mr. Gates has made 2 trips here now. And he, having previously worked for him, I can tell you he don't take trips for nothing. So, so.
Well, sitting where I am, I can hop in my car and drive 20 miles and I can tell him what you think.
Yeah, okay.
That's right. Right. Okay. That's right. There you go.
Please do.
Anyway,
hey, how about those Seahawks, Sean? Did you watch the game last night?
Yeah, I caught the very end of it. I caught the winning drive. Wasn't that something?
Well, I went to bed, but I was rooting for the Hawks.
Well, anyway. Well, it's just great to
hear
you again.
We got a big day today. We've got a candidate that's running as a Democrat for Joe Manchin's seat. He's only 32 years old.
Yeah.
Shrewsbury.
I've been watching.
That? Yeah, Zach.
Yeah.
Yeah, his name is Zach Shrewsbury.
Yeah.
And he's staying at the house, and he's hitting Morgan County today, but he's a great young candidate. He's a pro-labor, and he's an ex-Marine, and, you know, so he has all the credentials to keep Joe's seat in the D column with a real D.
Yeah, I'm going to have to respond to those fundraising emails that I'm getting.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, you could. Do you have a?
Well, I was going to ask if you supported him, but when you said he's staying at the house, like,
yeah.
I think we're gonna take a ride.
I had him when he was an organizer. He was an organizer with Good Jobs Coalition, and or Good Jobs First or something like that. But he stayed here right after he got out of the Marines, and now he's running for the U.S. Senate. It's pretty cool.
I'm going to send him some money, I think.
Well, yeah, right.
I'm not registered in West Virginia anymore, but I can contribute.
He needs to build an organizing network because you're never going to have enough money to take on those guys.
Absolutely.
You know, so it's got to
he'll be running against a billionaire and another, like, I don't know, ethics challenged Mooney. I mean, my God, how do you even categorize that guy?
But JB,
do you think Mooney's going to beat Justice?
No.
I guess it's possible, but I doubt it. I mean, Mooney comes up with more scandals against Justice. But
if I know anything about Jim Justice, he's already got a book on Mooney's, every little personal peculiarity about him. You know, that's just the kind of shit a company leader like him does.
Well, what I want to know is if I get in my car and drive 20 miles to explain the facts of life to Bill Gates, will you get in your car and drive 20 miles to explain them to Patrick Morrissey?
Oh boy, no. That's a I'll have to bring some peanuts.
Look,
I'll have to bring some
by
nuts.
Reputation, you know, Bill is easily approachable. You know, he's not an unreasonable guy until he makes up his mind. After that, you know, I mean, he'll stake his entire fortune on his own ego. He will.
Yeah.
You know. You know, so
Morrissey's
anyway.
A trip, and he was on. What's that guy from West Virginia? He's got the sports show.
Hoppy Kirchhoff.
McAfee.
Oh, McAfee.
Yeah. He was on there talking about the portal system, but how it is in basketball and football and the collegiate level, how they can transfer schools and all that. And apparently he filed suit to protect West Virginia's interest in the portal. And he got quite a thumbs up from all the jocks on the show.
Yep. I can imagine.
All right. Well, I think we've, explored an hour's worth of, you know, a better view of heaven than most religions are going to give you. So,
yeah. Yeah, Scott.
What are the unions doing to mobilize for your guy?
Not yet. I guess it's too soon for them to make a decision until after the primary, normally.
Oh.
And we don't know if he has a primary challenge or not.
Well,
right now,
he
doesn't.
We're going to try to get him an
audience.
That's
going to be the key to winning.
We got to get
absolutely.
Him.
Absolutely. Go ahead, John.
I think we should try to get him an audience in as many labor councils as want to hear a point on good and welfare about it. You know, he should, before the COPE process starts, okay, officially. And because that way there'll be some background for people to have been directly exposed to him rather than relying on, you know, media or other kinds of connections, you know, just have it one-on-one. I encouraged him, for example, in the interview to personally go call Cecil Roberts. I mean, I don't care at the end of the meeting whether you agree or disagree about everything, but he can tell you what just transition means to the United Mine Workers. He can tell you, okay? And I can tell you, when he says it, he's got backing of those people, okay? And so that's a guy to make a bridge with right there, okay? That can make a big difference in West Virginia.
Yep.
And same with some of the other locals that are construction-oriented and had some jobs related to the natural gas boom and all this other stuff, you know. The big thing is, I mean, everybody's working for money, right? The only real religious thing, in my view, that's important is the fact that I would hate to see a union like the United Mine Workers of America decline and that spirit go away from the United States labor movement because it's unique in some ways. And precious to the people who have ever been around it. Nonetheless, everyone's in there working for money. You know, no money paid, everyone's going away. All right, so there's compensation that's just or the best possible, and it seems to me that that's where unity in the labor movement can be found on making a transitions. And without that unity, every transition we make will be stolen, the value of it from it. That's my feeling about it anyway.
Well, I can't believe we got you on though, Sean. It's such short notice. We really appreciate it. And yeah, that won't be the last time. We're going to be checking in with you regular now.
No, yeah. This is fun. And the next time I'm back, I'll swing by and see you guys. I do get back.
We'd love it, man.
Yeah.
You ever get to Chicago?
I haven't recently, other than to make connections, but I will absolutely make a stop there.
Okay, well.
No, I generally come back about, you know, once every 60 days or so, usually to the Pittsburgh, Columbus, Charleston are the primary destinations. But yeah, I generally take some personal time and get around too.
Oh, we'd love to see you, man. All right.
Yeah.
All right. All right, everybody. I think we ought to say goodbye today. This has been the Labor Beat Radio Show on enlightenradio.org. By the way, next week, Scott is going to get Dan Kovalak on for us. And that guy's been all around the world. And so many times. And he's one of the most insightful commentators on the labor movements of different countries, by the way. Okay, so.
All right.
It's very cool. Very cool. And
see you all later.
All right, guys.
Thanks a lot, Sean. Thanks again, man. It's good to see you, brother. You look good. Looking good.
Wonderful to see you, too. I wish I could like that.
Recording stopped.